Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The Mosquito Fire is the latest wildfire in Northern California and currently sits at over 46,000 acres burned, with just 10% containment as of Sunday evening. The fire has forced over 11,000 residents to evacuate in the Sierra Foothill communities of Forest Hill and Todd Valley in Placer County, as well as Georgetown, Bottle Hill, and Volcanoville in El Dorado County. Nearly 6,000 homes and structures remain threatened, and close to 2,400 firefighters and personnel are working day and night. Governor Gavin Newsom declared a state of emergency. The hope is, with additional federal resources, CAL FIRE and assisting agencies can get a hold of the wildfire, which continues to grow. Joining us is Chris Vestal, Battalion Chief for Sacramento Metropolitan Fire District. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Vicky. How are you?
Doing good. Thank you. Thanks for joining us. I know it's been a busy weekend. What is the latest update you can share on the Mosquito Fire?
Well, at this point, we're at 46,500 acres, and it's continuing to grow. And it's growing primarily in two different areas. Some of the names may not be familiar to everybody, so I'll try and walk you through them. There is Buckeye Point, which would be very common to some people knowing the confluence of the north and middle fork of the American River. And then it's also progressing north and northeast past the community of Forest Hill in areas of Iowa Hill and the former gold rush town of Deadwood, which is some neat history there. It was a town where Leland Stanford Jr. actually founded his gold mining operation and found his fortune. But that former town, it's also part of the Western States Trail.
Yeah, there's a lot of history in that portion of the American River Canyon. The Mosquito Fire had zero containment until Sunday. What changed?
Well, this terrain is extremely difficult to build containment line on, so we can talk through that a little bit. Containment line isn't simply running a single bulldozer path through and having a couple firefighters stand there with hoses ready to attack the oncoming fire. Containment line means that that line can hold itself with an oncoming fire with minimal fire suppression efforts. So it has to be extremely wide. It also has to be down to mineral soil, so no vegetation or only large diameter vegetation that's limbed up. But these canyons and the steep terrain means that our bulldozers can't just do a straight line through it. And then the hand crews have to do improvement on either side of that. So removing some of the brush that bulldozers can't just knock over, that has to be removed from the area. And it's very tedious in this territory. We also have to build that line far away from the fire, or indirect, as we call it. So instead of building that line right on the fire perimeter, it has to be moved far out where our personnel, as well as our heavy equipment, can actually access.
Yeah, and especially when talking about hand crews, that is grueling work. And we're going to have relatively cooler temperatures this week. But what impact last week did the historic heat wave have on the wildfire, as well as the physical toll on fire crews?
Well, the weather is always a major factor. It oftentimes can drive wildfires. And we had historic heat here in Sacramento Valley and the Northern California region. We saw a few other fires as well in the North State that grew really fast. And we had a lot of resources that were assigned to those. When this fire started on September 6th, it was late in the afternoon. It was one of those over 105, 110 degree days. And it took a lot of resources for that initial attack. We then started getting more resources through the California Master Mutual Aid System. It's one of the most beneficial things that California has. We can get any number of resources, any type of resources at any time from any agency really, really quickly through the ordering process. However, we also had firefighters who were coming from some of those other incidents. They were already fatigued, working in extreme heat. So that's one of the things that fire managers look at. How fresh are our people? How long can they work? Are they being effective at doing their job in those assignments that we give them?
You're talking about steep, rugged terrain in the American River Canyon. And over the weekend, the incident's fire behavior analyst cautioned that while this isn't necessarily a weather show, it's a fuels show. I imagine there's a lot of low moisture in that area.
These fuels that we're currently fighting this fire in are historically and critically dry. Even today, with the incoming moisture that we've had settle in the last few days in the inversion layer, our fuel moisture, our relative humidity in the northeast portion of the fire was at 31% at 6 a.m. So for reference, 31% would be dry almost any day of the year, but to have that at 6 a.m. is really, really concerning. When we're making our plans on what we're going to do, our strategic objectives on building containment line or attacking the fire, we look at all those factors. So number one, we look at the fire itself. What's it doing? We look at the fuel that it's moving into. Is it heavy timber? Is it manzanita? And then we look at the recent fuel moistures in the area. We look at past fire history, and we look at the other types of natural breaks that we can have. The weather that we've had has been somewhat tropical. So we've had some additional moisture the last couple of days, but that doesn't mean that that has affected those critically dry and historically low fuel moistures.
I want to get to air quality and smoke as well as the fire producing pyrocumulus clouds. I mean, SF Gate reported it went 40,000 feet into the atmosphere. What impact does this have on the air response?
Well, when you see the pyrocumulus cloud, we actually have an atmosphere which is able to have that cloud lift up, and that smoke is not necessarily hovering to ground level. So it's not creating the inversion layer, which we saw the last several days. But those pyrocumulus clouds do present some challenges for us. As you mentioned, they can create their own weather systems. But the other thing that people need to understand about smoke is that it's particulate matter. We talked about it from an air quality standpoint. But that particulate matter that's being lifted high into the atmosphere, high into the sky, that looks really, really impressive, is also a solid matter. It's being lifted by heat and convection currents, which are moving up. When that gets too heavy to support itself because there's not enough heat, or there's just so much weight to that particulate matter that the heat can't support it anymore, that can then crash down. Those downdrafts can then push the fire out in nearly every direction. And then we start talking about the sporadic fire growth and behavior. And that becomes really dangerous for us.
When talking about the fire growth at the onset of the mosquito fire last week, a CAL FIRE battalion chief said it made about a 5,000 acre run in a matter of 2 to 3 hours. That's like 27 acres a minute. I mean, that's difficult to comprehend. Can you explain how that's possible?
Well, that's where we talk about these steep canyons. They're not just hard for our personnel to work on or even our heavy machinery, but it really can drive the fire as well. There's a lot of those steep canyons, as we've talked about already, but there's also features within those that add to the fire growth. Those valleys, and when you're talking about in the Sierras, think about Lake Tahoe, which is sitting at 5,000 or 6,000 feet, and then Sacramento, which is only sitting at, you know, a couple dozen feet. This fire is running uphill, and those winds that we have coming from predominantly the south and southwest can align and push that fire towards the east, but that's pushing it uphill. Heat rises. So as those align with that, that heat does exactly what it wants to do, and the fire goes exactly uphill like heat always has, as we've always been taught.
You know, this area has been prone to wildfires in the past. I mean, you just described the terrain and the conditions. How close is the mosquito fire in the footprints of and the burn scars of the King Fire in 2014 and the smaller American Fire in 2019?
Well, right now, the American Fire is actually providing some very good border for us on the eastern side of the fire. In fact, I was out in that area yesterday, and it's actually bumping up against it on some of those eastern portions of the fire. And we will work in general to improve lines next to prior burn scars because there has been a reduction in fuel. And that's another advantage is the prior containment lines that were built for the American and the King Fire allow us to do minimal work to improve lines rather than having to put in a lot of effort to build completely new lines. And the other thing with fire history, typically when we see a fire start in an area where there was a fire, whether it was a dozen or decades ago, or even 100 years ago, they oftentimes follow the same path. So we can use that past fire history as sort of a predictive indicator of what might happen with a new fire.
So predictability and also a buffer.
Absolutely. So we learn from the past, and then we also use those strategic advantages that were put in place for that prior fire and use them to our advantages now. We see what might have worked back then, or what didn't work, and we can implement those decisions and those objectives into our new firefight.
Given that last week Governor Newsom declared a state of emergency for this wildfire that opens up federal resources, what does that actually do? How does that help firefighters accomplish their job at containing and suppressing this wildfire?
Well, as I stated earlier, in California, we get our resources when we request them. When they're available and the order is in, we can get that, whether that's for fire engines, aircraft, fire managers, whatever it is. We put the order in and we get it. What then has to happen afterwards is, of course, it has to be paid for. And it's no secret that fighting fires is expensive. There's a lot of different agencies that are involved. In California, we often see CAL FIRE. We'll see the United States Forest Service. Then we'll see Cal OES, which acts as really the liaison or the agency rep for all the local governments that participate. All of those disaster declarations provide the funding that ultimately comes in behind and remedies the cost apportionment for the different parts of the fire and all the different agencies that respond to it.
Given that there's been some visual confirmation of a property that has either been damaged or destroyed, do you have any idea from a quantitative standpoint how many homes and structures have been damaged or destroyed?
We do know that there has been several properties that have been damaged and destroyed. Our damage inspection process is ongoing. That actually started a few days ago, but it's a very involved process. It's not just a matter of seeing a property and saying, yep, that one's destroyed. It actually gets entered into a database. It gets recorded. It gets an estimate of how much damage may have occurred or if it's considered to be destroyed. All of that has to go through a process. It has to be validated and verified. And then we want to provide that information as soon as possible to those who are affected by it. And the real reason we do that is so that they can then start their process on with recovery and rebuilding and making their decisions to move forward.
Evacuation orders and warnings expanded this weekend in Placer County. What message do you have for those waiting to return home safely in the last, 20 seconds or so that we have?
The biggest thing people need to understand about evacuation orders and warnings is that our incident commanders will not implement those unless we believe that there is a strong likelihood of life safety compromise. When we put those in, we recognize the inconvenience that it is for the community, the economic hardship that it can place. So I think everybody needs to understand that when those are put in, they are serious. It's time to leave immediately when you get an evacuation order. And if you're in a warning area, it's time to prepare so that when the evacuation order comes in, you leave immediately.
And that is Battalion Chief Chris Vestal with the Sacramento Metropolitan Fire District. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. We're back in just a few moments.